handle the truth.
The Denise Simon Experience. The Truth Matrix. Vetting, exposing, drilling down to the truth.
Rolling Thunder, this is Hitman, Seattle. Over. Hitman, this is Rolling Thunder, Seattle. Out.
The Denise Simon Experience. Exposing politics, lies, demagoguery, spin, fraud.
Grid to suppress, Mike Charlie, 435-921. Grid to mark, Mike Charlie, 473-989, out.
Promoting individual situational awareness. Question, probe, notice, ask why.
Mark smoke on the deck, two rounds AGPT. TOT 53.
And now, the Denise Simon Experience.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Denise Simon Experience. Very happy that you could join us and want to wish everybody a very happy new year. I've got the pleasure of having Tony Lyons back with us. It's been a while since Tony has joined us, but he's been a busy man, and he is the co-founder of American Values 2024, which is the Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Super PAC. He's a lawyer, but he's also the president of Skyhorse Publishing. And we're actually going to talk about the Wuhan cover-up and the terrifying bioweapons arms race. So you can tell, yeah, Tony's a busy man. He carved out some time for us. Welcome back, Mr. Tony Lyons.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Tony, we're finding here lately now that this administration, along with, I would say, the intelligence officials, are just lying to us. And I, you know, I mean, it's really kind of remarkable. We're now finding out, too, that they lied to us about the Chinese spy balloon because it did, in fact, use an American internet to communicate back to the mothership, back to Beijing. So I bet you're angry and frustrated like we are. Yes.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, we've been publishing a lot of books trying to expose as much as of what's going on as we possibly can.
Well, people are now, they're really trying to forget all things COVID and vaccinations. People don't even want to talk about them anymore. But the issue now is much bigger than that, is it not? It's really, it's our own government, it's our own intelligence officials, and it's the escalating, I don't know really what the word is, but the escalating operations of the Chinese Communist Party against the West. So it really, that piece does need to have some real discussions, and we need to continue to learn on that, correct?
Yeah, definitely. It's so hard to know how the world works. And, you know, you can't really blame people for not having a clear view, you know, when we have this incredibly powerful media sort of conglomerate set up that just gives you constant misinformation. And, you know, they're very smart in how they do it, because they call everybody else's information misinformation.
Yeah, sometimes they even sign their letters to that effect too. So,
you know, if you want to hide something from the public, and if you're really doing something terrible in this world, it's a great strategy to point the finger in all directions. And if you have a lot of power, it's a tool that can really work. So I think that's what's happened. And, you know, one of the books that we recently published is The Wuhan Cover-Up and the Terrifying Bioweapons Arms Race, mm-hmm. by Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And that really digs down into the whole history of what Bobby Kennedy believes, you know, caused or led to COVID, and is going to lead to a lot more, you know, many more problems in the future if we're not really careful. And it's impossible to be careful if you don't really know things are going on. It's impossible to fight those things if you assume that they're not going on. And like you said, so many people are just tired of discussing COVID. They've been inundated with, you know, fake news for 2.5 years, or maybe 3.5 years by now. And they just kind of had enough of it and they'd like to move on. The problem is that we can't really move on until right. we understand what happened, because, you know, as we all know, you know, if you don't understand the past or if you forget the past, then you're destined to repeat it.
You know, there was a time that we would have these intelligent leaks, and then, you know, whoever's doing the leaking would contact somebody in the media, and, you know, things would kind of blow up and there'd be a scandal and so forth. But this one, when it comes to the Wuhan and to bioweapons, there haven't been any leaks. Have you noticed that?
Well, I mean, there have been leaks in the sense that there have been a lot of people who want to talk about it.
Right.
And we've published some of their books. But the problem is that they get targeted and vilified. They get hit pieces, and they're made to look crazy to the public so that they're not believed. And that's what kind of happened now, is that it's hard to be a whistleblower now. It's hard to leak things, and it's hard to convince the public that the things that they hear all day just aren't true.
Hence the reason for the book, correct?
Right. So, during the course of working with Bobby Kennedy on both the real Anthony Fauci and the Wuhan cover-up, I was so fascinated with his dedication to telling the whole story and to really making it complete. So both of these books are incredibly long, and many people wanted to get him to make them shorter, but I think the feeling that he had and the feeling that he expressed was that he really wanted there to be a record of these things, and he wanted to get the record right and to get it straight and to have thousands of citations. So the real Anthony Fauci had, you know, something like 2,200 citations. And, QR codes that people could go to actually get to those citations. And the Wuhan cover-up has more than 3,200 citations. And it's, you know, it's a 600-page book. So the idea is that history is, you know, being controlled, you know, whether it's, you know, the 40 years ago or 80 years ago or last week, it's hard to get the news. So that's the beauty of printed books, is that they can't be kind of altered. So if for example, you want to change an ebook, you can, you know, theoretically do that by making a change to the master copy and then and then that would feed out to all of people's sure. devices. So you could actually change a book retroactively, but a printed book, you know, of course,
it's
can't
there.
Be changed.
It's memorialized. But you are, I mean, there are some people that are supporting this effort. The whole cover-up thing. Governor Ron DeSantis has brought it up many times on Fauci, and you got Senator Rand Paul. So there is a force here that is certainly trying to make sure that as much as they can that this stuff bubbles to the surface.
Rand Paul has definitely tried pretty hard, and I just bought Skyhorse bought Regnery Publishing this week.
Oh, and, congratulations.
Thank you. And Regnery is the publisher of Rand Paul's recent book.
Yes.
And that's kind of on the same general topic. And so, you know, I'm planning to talk to him and to try to encourage him to push the book more, push the ideas more, and go after Fauci harder. You know, the fact that COVID's over and that, you know, Fauci's sort of gone, you know, no longer working directly for the government, you know, in the same way that people don't want to talk about the origins of COVID and get to the bottom of what happened at Wuhan, we really have to know the whole story. And Rand Paul, Bobby Kennedy, you know, two or three other senators, Senator Ron Johnson, who's gotten, you know, right into the heart of the problem. You know, these people all have to get together and really get some traction now. And Bobby Kennedy's done so much research that he's a perfect person to kind of be at the center of a congressional hearing on what happened and how we make sure that the public comprehends it and that, you know, it never happens again in the future. And it's going to happen if we don't change the way we operate. So, you know, you really have to look at the whole history of bioweapons. And it and this book sort of goes back to Eisenhower's warning against the military-industrial complex and the scientific elite and the idea that they could kind of hijack public policy. And so I don't think most people have seen that happen, but it clearly is happening. And, you know, it sort of ties into, you know, after World War II, there were some very high-level Nazis and Japanese doctors who had, you know, committed atrocities during World War II, who were then brought to the United States, and their technology was brought into the Pentagon. They were brought here, you know, as part of the effort to fight in the Cold War. So they had this idea that the Cold War was brewing and that, you know, there was going to be this sort of battle for the brains of the Japanese war machine and the German Nazi war machine. And, you know, that's kind of a scary concept that those people then had so much power, that ex-Nazis wound up with so much power in the beginning of this, you know, gigantic weapons race and bioweapons race. And so the public, I don't think, generally knows that story either.
Tony, China is, you know, when we think of any kind of a conflict, a military conflict, we always think about tanks and fighter jets and those kinds of things. But I don't think people necessarily understand that China is all about asymmetric or hybrid warfare. And, you know, they have some pretty nefarious friends, as in North Korea and Russia and Iran. And it scares me what kind of collaborations could be happening there when it comes to other types of conflicts, and that includes bioweapons. Do you think that there is some collaboration going on with those countries, or is this all really ownership of the Chinese Communist Party?
No, there definitely is collaboration going on, and it's scary to look at some of the details. I mean, the Wuhan lab, you know, which is really well covered in Bobby Kennedy's The Wuhan Cover-Up, you know, it was at the center of this bioweapons research. And if you look at, you know, the EcoHealth Partners operation, that, you know, there was a Chinese doctor, you know, working with bat viruses, for the Chinese military. And, you know, so you've got a sort of a multinational group in Wuhan, you know, funded and orchestrated by Dr. Fauci, you know, who's funding this gain of function research in Wuhan through EcoHealth Alliance, And he's doing it against U.S. law, you know, because there's been this executive order saying that you can't do gain of function research. So he's partnering with the Chinese, and it's very hard to know what the level of this partnership is. But it's there, and it's scary.
Do are other countries stomping their feet on any of this? You know, I don't hear anything out of Italy, and Italy took a hard hit with an awful lot of deaths. I mean, they clearly were way unprepared for anything. But I don't hear, you know, scientists in Germany or France or Britain that are putting blame on gain of function or Fauci. Have you?
You know, there are a lot of people in all of these countries. It's the same kind of story that it is here. There are a lot of people coming out wanting to discuss it. And, you know, they're described as conspiracy theorists. They get hit pieces in newspapers and magazines and on TV shows. They get, you know, their you know, articles get taken down. Their peer-reviewed studies get withdrawn. So, you know, it's a really powerful force that they're up against all around the world. And, you know, the world generally has banned bioweapons research since the Geneva Protocol that was developed, I think, in 1925. And, you know, so this has been going on since then. You know, when the Cold War ended, you know, the defense business, you know, in the United States and in other countries, you know, kind of needed to keep on having forces in the world to fight. So the idea might be that they kind of created or encouraged Islamic terrorism or other kinds of terrorism, and then could justify bioweapons research under the idea that that you had to do gain of function research, you know. And if listeners don't know what that means, it means making viruses stronger. In the idea that we would need to research them, so if a terrorist group got a hold of them, they could then, you know, that we could combat that. So we needed terrorists in the world after the Cold War, and we needed these kinds of threats, and then we needed to then spend a lot of money and have a lot of people make a lot of money on research geared towards preventing the threat that we had then created.
So what about American universities? Because there were a lot of American universities that were also collaborating with the Wuhan lab, correct?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so, you know, that's another problem, is that, you know, these campuses have become sort of part of the government apparatus.
Yes.
And so there have been a lot of accusations that there's, you know, illegal gain of function research being done on college campuses, you know, sponsored by the U.S. government and coordinating with, you know, biolabs all around the world. So these are the kinds of things that the Wuhan cover-up really gets into, and that are so critical to comprehending what's going on in the world. So, you know, gain-of-function research is becoming the kind of the backbone of the biodefense industry. And it's justified, like I said, as defensive vaccine research to be able to combat terrorist activities. And it's becoming a bigger threat in itself. So the actual, you know, so it's the same sort of thing that happens in so many different ways, that people who claim that they're trying to protect democracy do it by, you know, for example, taking Donald Trump off the ballot in Colorado and Maine, or making it impossible for Bobby Kennedy to run as a Democrat because they've decided that they don't like democracy. So So you tell the public, on the one hand, that you're trying to protect democracy, but in reality, you're trying to protect a kind of fascism, which is a system where candidates can't get the opportunity to debate or to be on the ballot or to have their information get out into the world by being deplatformed or, sort of vilified in all kinds of ways, called a conspiracy theorist, you know, those kinds of things. So, so it is very hard to really understand how these things work, but we kind of create a problem. And the problem is that there are these fascist tendencies in the world, and then we take people's rights from them to protect them from these things that we've created. And the same kind of thing, like I said, happens with bioweapons research, is that the cure to this constructed problem then becomes much worse than any actual threat was before that.
What's the ultimate mission here? What's the ultimate goal? Is it to reduce population? Is it for governing power across the globe? Help me with that.
So I think that the actual, you know, that the goal is sort of is
fear?
more power mm-hmm. power and control over people, more and more power. So whether it's one world government or taking money from the entire population of the United States or other countries and having it kind of funnel upwards to a very small number of people who have most of the power, most of the money, and control all the narratives, control the news. And so that's, you know, potentially what the goal is. And, you know, we have to keep pushing and fighting back and struggling to actually get what the goals are. Because if you don't understand goals and if you don't understand what's happening, then you can't really fight.
Yeah, precisely. And I think that's the part that, on a larger scale, kind of on critical thinking here, I think we need to, you know, form a couple conclusions of what the ultimate goal is. I don't want to say was, because I think we're still in the present tense and future tense on all of this. And then kind of backstop it all, kind of work towards all the evidence that fits into, it's not a conspiracy theory, which means kind of a nutty theory. I think it's a factual situation. But Tony, we thank you so much for spending some time with us and mostly on this whole topic, because it's much bigger than I think just vaccinations and COVID. This is a arms race. This is a race for power. The book is The Wuhan Cover-Up and the Terrifying Bioweapons Arm Race, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Tony Lyons is the publisher. So, Tony, congratulations again on your purchase of Regnery. Got some good authors over there, too. And
yeah,
I hope you'll come back, because I think that there's, kind of like every month that passes, we learn something else. So, thank you, Mr. Tony Lyons. Ladies and gentlemen, there's more coming your way on the Denise Simon Experience. Stay with us.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips that you plan in advance, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends for which you make a group chat 3 months before so that nobody or anything is missing? Or your daughter's first birthday party. You planned it with such dedication that instead of the first, it felt like our quinces. The same way you plan each detail for those moments. Start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Protecting your family is the best plan you can make. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're so pleased that you stay with us here on the Denise Simon Experience. We're going to welcome back Tom Trento. He is the founder and chief of the United West. I think it's theunitedwest.org, if I got it right. And he is a Tom, you've been at this decades. I mean, we go back a lot of years, but you know, the good work that you're doing against jihad of all stripes and national security is remarkable. And I'm so glad that you stay in the fight. But more than that, that you carved out some time to be with us. Welcome back, Mr. Tom Trento.
Hey, thank you. And what a great third day of a new wild and wacky year. Yeah, briefly, I was in college. Wanted to go into the FBI, did a degree in law enforcement, got involved in a crazy Bible study. I was headed in the wrong direction and gave my life to Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. Changed my course of study, went to Moody Bible Institute, studied theology, then Denver Seminary, became a Christian apologist. So I've been studying Islam for 40 years. And since 9/11, been fighting the jihadis, and you know, I'll be in my grave, the fight will go on, but we're doing what we can.
We'll help you carry that baton. You know, under the Biden administration, I think that by the time the end of his first term, we'll have let in somewhere around 10 million, maybe in as many as 12 million people, and we don't know who these people are. And we've got sanctuary cities and sanctuary states across the country, but I would argue now we've become a sanctuary country. And that means that we're giving safe harbor to people that have very militant objectives about them, that their quivers are full of some nefarious arrows. And, you know, that into itself, I often refer to, you know, our politicians take an oath, all enemies, foreign and domestic. And we don't even define anymore, or can't define, what a domestic enemy is. Tom Trento, help me with this. Please.
When the war broke out in Gaza, the first week of the war, 100, now for your listeners, this is critical. It's the key to understanding how I could help you and your listeners understand this. 100 Muslim staff of the Biden administration asked the administration to provide psychological counseling because the Israelis were disturbing them psychologically. So we have an infiltrated administration. I can't tell you how many neo-Marxists, you know, graduated from Harvard that are in the administration. But they believe, it's very, very simple. They believe, they've been taught in all the Ivy phony league schools, they've been taught that America is the occupying nation, the great oppressor, and Israel is an occupying, oppressing nation. And both nations need to be destabilized. And what better way than to open up the border and bring in over 150 countries? They're emptying prisons. They're nut houses. They're sending people here. They're getting the worst of the worst, mixing them with a few good people, all illegal. There's a legal way to do this. My grandparents came over legally. So we're in the greatest national security disaster of our life. Now more jihadis are coming over, and I expect the jihadis to go kinetic and blowing stuff up and running people over in 2024.
What kind of disturbs me here is that any kind of news media, whether it be cable or, you know, local channels or newspapers, are all talking about Hamas. And then, you know, from time to time, they'll refer to the Houthis. But there are other militant factions, and that includes the Palestinian Islamic Jihad and offshoots of that. And, you know, we're supposed to have some kind of grace when it comes to protecting the Palestinians. But the Palestinians didn't protect the Palestinians. Would you kindly describe some of that for my listeners?
Well, all we got to do is read the Hamas, and H-A-M-A-S is the English transliteration of an Arabic name, the Islamic Resistance Movement. So Hamas is considered the Islamic Resistance Movement, and that's important. It's Islamic. It's resisting the West. Israel happens to be the closest Western country. And it's a movement. It's a worldwide, global, theocratic, mandated by Muhammad, by Allah movement. So that's the ideology. You are so right. There are, you know, umpteen groups, probably a half a dozen key ones like Al-Qaeda, Islamic State, PIJ, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, falling under that. Now, the unique thing, Iran, which is not Sunni Muslim, like all of the Hamas groups, they're Shia, they hate each other, except if there's a Jew or Christian in sight,
they
want to kill them. They want to be the big Muslim leaders. They want to take over Saudi Arabia and control Mecca and Medina. And they've used their money for the past 40 years to co-opt the Sunni groups. And now the guy that got whacked yesterday in Beirut, Salim al-Rouri, he was the he would be considered the General Eisenhower during World War II, before D-Day invasion. Ike, General Eisenhower. Imagine if he got killed, the enemy killed him. Israel, supposedly it was Israel, killed their General Eisenhower, Hamas's General Eisenhower. But his job was to unify Iran, the Shia, and all the Sunni Muslim jihadis to destroy America and Israel. And that's the big plan. It's called the Unity Jihad, all Muslims everywhere. And right now, the Muslim Brotherhood, the leaders of Hamas and all those groups in the U.S., we believe they are aggressively leading their young lions, all these protesters, to have a year of death and destruction following the Black Lives Matter riots of 2020. That's what we're about to start seeing.
It was just, let's see here. I think it was almost immediately after Biden became president. He appointed a Palestinian, Mahir Bitar, as the senior director for intelligence programs on the National Security Council. We can just about imagine, you know, what this Palestinian, Mr. Bitar, is actually advising this administration, this White House, when it comes to all things Israel and all things United Nations. And then, you know, we had Robert Malley, which I'm sure that you can talk at length about. We have a situation here where this administration has actually invited in the militancy towards Israel into advisory roles, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And Bitar, Mahir Bitar, just a few years ago, you know, 10 years ago, he's on campuses leading Students of Justice in Palestine and Israel Apartheid Weeks. He's a campus activist. Well, he's a pretty slick guy. He's a well-educated guy.
Georgetown.
So he eventually, what's that?
From Georgetown, graduated.
Yeah. And so where there's, you know, a chair funded by Qatar, by the Saudis, they handpicked him and said, okay, you're going to be a brother, Muslim brother. Here's your $3,000 Armani suit. No more screaming and yelling. You're going to be a diplomat. We're going to train you. You're going to get into the Democrat Party. And when you're on the inside the wire, that's where your power is going to come to play. So he's one of the guys leading the coalition. Denise, for your listeners, just imagine if a bunch of jihadis jumped on a camel with a bunch of communists, and rode into town. Well, that's exactly what we have in spades in the Biden administration. This bizarre infusion, and it's not bizarre because they kill each other, but when the destruction of America in New York City is their prime target, is the possibility they work together, and Bitar is one of the leaders of that coalition to destabilize America, create a civil war of some sort, weaken our economy, and then bring Islam in as the answer. That's the plan.
Well, let's add Rima Dodin to the discussion, because she is yet another Palestinian White House. I guess she's in the legal affairs office, whatever that necessarily means. I don't think that media or enough discussion is being had, Mr. Tom Trento, of who actually is in this administration that's putting forth these influences into policy with how they approach all things Israel and Gaza and Hamas and the Palestinians, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And she's another one of these, political advisors in the Biden administration. And she's got, her parents are from, I go back and forth to Israel a lot. We've looked for Palestine and, what is the history of Palestine started in 1948 when all the five countries attacked Israel on their first day. And then they came up with, well, we're Palestinians, but let that be as it may. Her parents are from Palestine, which is Israel. She grew up here. She went to all these, high level schools, Berkeley, all of this.
Berkeley, yeah.
And she's a jihadi. She is part of this combination of America, the oppressor. Allah has me here. I will work to destabilize America. Then we will usher in Islam as the salvation for all Americans. That's their plan.
All right. So we also, as I said, we've got sanctuary cities. We've got sanctuary states. We've got sanctuary. I mean, we've become a sanctuary country. But now we have the White House that's actually given sanctuary to, I would argue, militancy. Is that overstating it, Tom Trento?
No, it's not overstating it. If you have studied like I have, your good friend Claire Lopez and others, Guandolo, for many, many years, you know that a jihadi is a jihadi is a jihadi. And all Muslims worldwide, we seriously critique Islam as a completely failed system, a demonic system, a destructive system. But we make the distinction that not every Muslim follows Islamic doctrine. Thank God they don't. Mm-hmm. But they're supposed to. Everyone is supposed to be a jihadi. Those who are observant Muslims, they're jihadis. They're on a spectrum. They're at, let's say they start at zero when they're born. Then their parents, particularly in Gaza and the West Bank, start telling them, okay, our job is to kill Jews. Then by the time they're 14, 15, they're throwing stones at the Israelis. Then they're throwing bombs. Then they blow themselves up. And then the U.S. tax dollars pay the parents of the guy who blew himself up and killed Jews in Israel. So all of them are in a spectrum. The militancy will occur once there's a saturation of a population in a given area. When Muslims realize they have at least a 10% amount of population, then the militancy comes out.
I get emails every day about swords of iron, and I know what it is, but media never seems to say it. Will you explain to my listeners what swords of iron is, please?
Sure. Swords of iron is the name we have chosen, I'll tell you why, as the name of our one-year campaign, all of 2024, to support Israel's war in Gaza, but more specifically, the spillover from Israel into the streets of New York and elsewhere of the jihadis. Our Swords of Iron campaign is designed to help shut that down and defeat it in America. We got the name from the name Israel gave to this operation, this war they're in now. They call it Swords of Iron. A sword has two edges. One, it could be used defensively to defend yourself, or it could be used offensively. And typically, Israel wields the sword defensively. They've taken it out of the sheath, and this is an offensive battle with a sword of iron. Not a sword of wood, not a sword of paper, a sword of iron. It's going to be deadly, destructive, and effective.
All right. So what's the plan? What's the plan going forward? I mean, I'm seeing that the Mossad and Israeli intelligence is working pretty hard to defeat their enemy. You know, we just had a sizable bombing in Beirut, which took out a lot of the leadership of Hamas in Lebanon, which I think was long overdue. And that's a good thing. And Netanyahu has said that, you know, we're going to change up some of our footprint in Gaza and maybe move some people around. And that's good. But he said this is hardly over. And I think that's good, too. But what kind of pressure is the Biden administration or the United States going to still put on Israel to get through this? And what will achievement, what will a win look like on the other side?
Well, yeah, the we know what a win will look like. The Hamas leadership and their military capability will be destroyed. And left alone, Israel will accomplish that at probably 3 or 4 months. They could accomplish it tomorrow if they actually wanted to commit genocide and bombed everybody. They can win in a day or two. Mm-hmm. But they've got to do it trying to, you know, avoid killing Gazans, who want to kill them anyway. So that's going to happen. And the Biden administration will start to apply increasing pressure against them because of the lobby we've spoken about, Mahir Batar and the others in the government. They're going to put tremendous pressure. Number one. Number two, 100,000 people up north in Israel and, 150,000 from the south now live in Tel Aviv or Eilat and can't return home. Israel will have to stop Hezbollah in order for Israel to return to normal. So this is going to be an inevitable war in 2024 up in Lebanon. And it could happen sooner than we think. And the third problem is Iran. And as soon as Israel knows, and they know, they're inside Iran, mm-hmm. that Iran has gotten to a certain red line in their bomb-making capability, they'll hit Iran alone, but there'll be tremendous pressure by the Israelis and others for the U.S. to assist in some capacity in hitting Iran. So we're going to have, we're declaring 2024 the year of the evil jihadi, not only in the United States, but worldwide. And they have to be killed. You know, they seek martyrdom. They believe it's their entry to paradise. And it's kill or be killed. The U.S. is at war. We don't realize it. And our work, the United West, is to wake people up and not pick up a gun or a sword, as Israel's doing, but fight with our brains and fight with our law enforcement agencies. The commie jihadis want us to start battling it out in the street and break down social fabric of the country. No, we have to put pressure on our law enforcement agencies to follow the rule of law, wrap these guys up, kill them if they're still, you know, trying to kill you, and put them in jail and deport them. It's got to be a rule of law year to defeat the communist jihadist attacks on America.
Tom Trento, we hear much of, but you know, the United States and the policy, the approach or the lack of approach or rules of engagement with respect to Israel. We hear almost nothing about Ukraine anymore. But what are allied foreign leaders saying about Iran? I don't hear a lot out of France. I hear virtually nothing out of Italy or Germany or Britain. And I almost think if we put pressure on those countries, because remember, they were all part of the JCPOA, the Joint Plan of Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action for the nuclear Iranian nuclear program, they all look pretty stupid now. And, you know, I don't think this administration has any discussions with any of the Western Europe leader, European leaders, and they should. So I need you to have those discussions.
Yeah.
Help me with that one, Mr. Tom Trento.
Well, in the past 4 or 5 years, we've had about a half a dozen European, South American countries go go blue to red, left to right. And Italy has a new president, Meloni, and Geert Wilders just this most likely going to become the prime minister
Brazil.
Of the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Argentina. Brazil went south, but Argentina's got a good guy now, right?
Yeah, and he's going nuts, man. He's shutting everything down and changing things. So, look, the winds are blowing against Iran on the Western side, Western civilization. France, as much as Macron is a, you know, lefty, skinny cigarette-smoking nitwit, he knows what's going on. And they have a very capable fighting force, Germany, too. And they know Iran is a threat to everybody. So, those are the Western countries. Forget about the Sunni side of the Muslim countries, 56 Muslim countries, most of them Sunni. Just about everyone wants, Israel to strike Iran because they're all afraid of Iran.
Mm-hmm.
So world opinion is there, but you're not going to hear it, you know, touted in the New York Times. And even when Israel attacks Iran, the world's going to, the same people are going to condemn Israel, but be popping champagne in the back room that they did it. They finally did it. So that's what's on the horizon. Because if Iran can move on Saudi Arabia and gain control of the oil fields in the southern part of Saudi Arabia, Iran will control 56% of the world's oil supply. And imagine how much it's going to cost Germany to heat up their homes in the winter when Iran's controlling the oil.
Tom Trento, just in the last couple of days here, the Argentinian government arrested 3 foreigners from Syria and Lebanon under the suspicion of planning a terrorist act. And I only mention this because, as we said, I think some of these leaders are kind of coming around, and this puts the fight necessarily or the infiltration into our hemisphere. And I would say that the fact that you had these 3 that were arrested, that may have been credit to some work of the Mossad. And it wasn't all that long ago that you had the 1992 bombing in Argentina of the Jewish Center that left 85 dead. So there's some positive movement that's happening here. Do you think so?
The amazing capabilities of the Israeli intelligence agencies, the Mossad is one of them, is interesting. I'll tell you just very quickly, theologically, when the Jews were dispersed out of Israel by the Romans in the 70 AD, they went to every country in the world and they lived there for 2,000 years. So they are citizens of every country in the world, indigenous citizens. But then when Israel was reconstituted, May 14, 1948, they all came home and Israel said, hey, wait a minute. We're sending some of you back to despise in all these countries. So Israel has an amazing indigenous spy network worldwide. So they're helping the Argentinians and others. And I think there was even a situation in Turkey recently. But as it relates to the U.S., Christopher Wray, the director, I guarantee you in his private meetings with his top people, he is screaming on Pennsylvania Avenue in his office at the top of his lungs, go do something. Go find these guys. You got to stop them. And then his diplomatic words about a month ago in a congressional hearing.
Mm-hmm.
When he was asked, what's going on with Muslim terrorists? He says, all the lights are blinking red. That was his diplomatic speak for this thing's out of control. If I were the interpreter, I would have said, Director Ray just said, there's crazy Muslims all over America and they want to kill us and we don't know how to handle this. And, I'm going nuts. That would have been my translation of his, all the lights are blinking red. So
he must be not only at odds with the White House, but he has to be at odds, if what you say is true, with the Department of Justice, yes?
Absolutely. And, the deep state, the people that have been there for 20, 30 years that are leftists, that don't like America, want their pensions, all of this, a lot of ideologues, they're at odds, obviously. Even Joe Biden. He and Netanyahu have been friends for 45 years.
Sort of.
So his initial reaction was to stand with Israel, and he had a place for Israel in his heart. He demonstrated that through the years.
Until
he
did
a long time. Until the 100 people plus in the administration said, all right, you got a little too far. So he's at odds with his own people.
Tom Trento, theunitedwest.org. Thanks for your good work in all of this and explaining some things for my listeners and putting some things in the new word is context. But thank you for that and staying in the fight.
Okay.
So come back soon. Be well in the meantime. And ladies and gentlemen, there's more coming your way on the Denise Simon Experience. Stay with me.
The conversation starter. This is Talk 92.1 WDDQ 8L Valdosta.